it's recording.
All right, cool. Fire up. We are on episode 3 of the Pitcast.
Pitcast.
And we are here with our guest. He is known by many names.
Bobby the Brain.
Bob the Brain. Three B's. Blood Moon Bob. Big Brain Bob. And you may know him, or will know him in the future, as the organizer behind the...
Old School Players Ball.
Old School Players Ball.
Grant's not here this week either, so we've just swapped him out with Bob. So
hey, guys. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, it's an absolute pleasure. I'm Carter, the MTG Meatball. We got Moss over there in the corner. And it's going to be sort of a twofer, at least in regards to running down that entire crazy Old School Players Ball weekend that we did. So first, Bob... We were kind of hoping to grill you a little bit on...
Rake him over the coals.
Yeah, regarding how this all began, right? Because
sure.
I remember the scene, like this was, you know, probably like half a year or so after I started playing. And it felt like when, like, I remember you mentioning something like, guys, I've got this big idea on the horizon. And you were keeping your cards really close to your chest. You were keeping it on the down low. Were you thinking to yourself, I want to make the American NoobCon?
No, that was not the original thought. I think it sort of came about as a opportunity to make a destination event in Chicago because yeah. we've become the epicenter for old school in the North America, really. So
yeah, we're lucky to have that.
The epicenter is where the earthquake originates from.
Yeah.
Boom!
It's more like ground zero in the bad way.
Yeah. So when it all collapses, yeah, we know where it began.
So like patient zero, ground zero. Yeah. So yeah,
the
infection began here.
Old
yeah, if this is like the map from the movie Outbreak, like this is like
yeah.
where all the dots are. But yeah, so the idea was... You know, pick a summer...
The sickest dudes.
Right. Yeah, we're sick. Exactly. So, you know, pick a good time of the year for people to come into Chicago and then have a big tournament where, you know, they sort of... Others can get to experience what it's like to, you know, be in one of our events. Like,
yeah.
it's any other event, but it's a larger scale, and we had great luck finding Revolution Brewing Tap Room as the venue... to host us, and you know, last year was such a big, you know, success that you know we wanted to roll that into this year. So Jaco and I, you know, sort of wrangled it, and you know, lots of lords have pitched in their help and ideas, and I think it's you know just taken off.
So it was kind of a tactical decision on your part to put it at the end of summer. As
yeah,
opposed
absolutely.
To inviting people to a winter
yeah.
in Chicago.
No, that would
hey
not
guys, our city is so awesome.
Right.
Check it out.
That would not be conducive to repeat success.
People would be like, why? No, why would I come to Chicago in the fucking winter?
Exactly. So, like, I think August, personally, I feel is the best month to be in Chicago. So,
yeah.
sort of, and it also fell in line. We had a run of sort of reoccurring events. You know, StripCon, you know, all these kind of repeat offenders, and then
yeah,
August
there
was sort of a dull sort
yeah,
of period.
There's
so.
A window of time there.
Yeah.
Yeah, and that's how things are. Or no, go ahead.
Well, you're a couple months removed yet from Eternal Weekend, too, so you're not really stepping on any toes there, so.
Yeah.
Timing's
yeah,
good.
You don't want to coordinate at the same time. Well, I think this is what's really becoming interesting. Tournaments that have happened once, right? Like the Bootleggers Ball in Nashville, or what's going out on the East Coast in
LobsterCon,
which is going to be in, what, October?
Yeah.
Something?
End of September.
It's going to be interesting to see which ones get solidified as yearly events.
Yeah.
And that was kind of what happened around here, right? We were like,
yeah.
well, we did, you know, whatever StripCon was last year.
Right.
Do we want to run back the same thing this year, you know? Do we want these to be, like, designated times and tournaments and events.
And it's been a great opportunity to inject sort of different flavor into it, just so it's not the same old thing every single time.
Oh, yeah.
You know, I think the ball has the scale of the event
mm-hmm.
and the, you know, interest. I think we had people from 20 states this year come through.
Yeah.
So, you know, that's just tremendous. And then we did it, the team tactical event this year, which was
yeah.
a lot of fun. So, you know, just doing different things to mix it up.
Yeah, we had, what, 20 states, but we didn't end up getting any international fellows, did we?
No, we did not. We had feelers in from some of the Swedes and some people from... You know,
that's an area where we need to expand. I mean, Chicago's easy enough to travel into, I guess, but...
I don't know. I have no control over that, obviously.
Yeah, right.
But hey, you know, just the fact that there's, you know, occasional comparisons to NoobCon's pretty exciting.
I think you make a good point. Whenever, you know, I think there's lots of people voicing particular concerns about old school, right? Card format is stagnant, right? So a lot of people are saying
card pool.
Card pool. You're right. And you know, a lot of people are saying like, well, old school would be better if Factory couldn't pump itself, or like Mind Twist and Library are super unfair. We shouldn't play with those cards. Well, go ahead and stage your own tournament where those are the rules. See who shows up and see if you have a good
That's
time.
Right. Yeah.
Right. Instead of fucking talking about the shit, stage a tournament. See how well it works.
It's too easy to talk about shit and just post about shit online versus actually going out and putting the effort into organizing stuff.
It's the best way to find out if these ideas have legs, because nobody really knows. You know, I've played in several tournaments, you know, and for instance, that have unrestricted necropotence, right? And,
yep.
You know, whenever people talk about 95, they say, oh my god, that's the necropotence format. Right. Oh my God. Yeah,
absolutely.
It's really not.
It's there.
It's there, but you know.
Yeah, they talk about it, but do they play it? I mean, come on.
You got to play the games.
Yeah.
And so I just want to, and if I could thank a couple people for the ball, I think you know, Revolution hosting us the second year in a row. We were up to 84 people. Mm-hmm. We sweet talked them into giving us a couple extra tables.
Yeah,
this year.
There was a section, of course, of the brewery that we laid claim to last time, and then this year we had to like extend sort of into the main seating area.
It was
kind
of awkward. We were sort of mixed
tables.
In with the general public.
The muggles, yeah.
Yeah, they gave us some like weird looks at times, but you know, I think we, you know, treat their staff with, you know, care and everything like that.
Oh, for sure.
We got along great with everybody, and. Big ups to Jayco. Big ups to Nathan Mullen for taking photos.
Oh, I looked through some of these photos, by the way, and Mullen captured like, which a moment that for me is like practically the reason why I play old school. He got a picture of my opponent reading Gauntlets of Chaos.
Sure.
Like my card was in their hands.
That was Ben Wagner.
It was Ben. It was the first round. And I was like, yes, that's why I put it in my deck.
And honestly,
for like that very moment.
Although I'm sure that was a moment that repeated quite a few times over the course of the tournament, if not every round.
Well, whenever somebody didn't, I was like, oh, that's impressive.
Either
you're totally fronting, because I had never heard of that card before.
Did not expect
either.
That. Yeah.
What was the?
Or you're like, oh yeah, obviously Gauntlets of Chaos.
What was the best thing you stole with the gauntlet? I don't want to sidebar this too much, but I got a
library.
During that game or during the ball?
Yeah, I
stole that's
library. Did you have seven cards?
And seven drawing cards.
Oh,
that's fucking busted.
Yeah,
that's fine.
I gave him. Yeah, I
totally
gave him my.
Fair,
I gave him my island. Yeah.
Okay. Well, cool. It is a good basic land. Best one there is.
Wait, you can steal lands?
Yeah. Yeah.
Artifacts, lands, creatures.
So we also got a judge this year for the ball.
Yeah.
His name is Chase Shank from Peoria, Illinois, level 2 judge. I think that helped a lot keeping things moving because, you know, people might not know this, but Jayco and I, if we're at a tournament, we want to play in it. So
if you can believe it.
Yeah, because, you know, with as much going on, you know.
He was doing a lot of work,
play,
too.
So,
oh,
exactly.
Are you kidding me? These old cards are so convoluted. Like,
mm-hmm.
You know how Preacher works?
Yeah,
like,
I do.
Preacher, like, it's crazy. Lorian was explaining to me. It's like when you activate it, you don't have a chance. Like, when you tap Preacher, you can't, like, activate your factory in response.
Sure.
It already has, like, a... target
just happens,
or something.
So, yeah.
So yeah, somebody's gonna have to explain this to me. But it's
well,
it's
we should
like that.
Reach out to Chase Shank and he can explain.
He was saying he
Chase
to play.
Chase
I was talking to him a little bit after the event. He said he liked what he saw and was interested in even playing next year. Excuse me. So you know, maybe we can get him out there.
Yeah, no, I'm sure he'd be into it. Yeah, we almost threw him in there. We did end up with an even number of players at 84. So we were concerned. We were gonna hook him up with Jacob's Pink Weenie deck and just send him on his way. And yeah, so that was great, and I don't know if you saw Stephen Maldonado's playmats. he commissioned.
Oh yeah,
this insane.
Yeah, I saw
one.
I have one.
Okay, fair enough. So you know,
we described it for our listeners last week. Okay. We showed it to the listeners last week.
I'm sure the visual really blew their fucking minds because
it's the same dude who did the NYSC, and I think the same dude who did the Dice City.
Yes,
Greg Fenton.
Yeah, Greg Fenton. He did a
big
great job.
Big ups to Greg.
And those playmats are still. We're going to make a limited run of an additional number of them. So if you hit up Stephen Maldonado at liquidpork@gmail.com.
Liquid pork.
Liquid pork.
Liquid
is it,
pork.
Is it one word? Is there an underscore?
It's lowercase one word. Liquid.
Smooth
pork.
As liquid pork, baby.
No space at gmail.com.
Yeah.
And, you know, we did raise, I think the count is over $1,500 or $1,700. Jayco is still tabulating all of
he's
the...
He's still busy spending the proceeds
crunching,
is what he's doing.
Crunching the numbers or, you know, buying a single room occupancy hotel
getting another boot removed from his car.
Yeah. Exactly. So, you know, another really fun part of the weekend was... Friday night.
Oh yeah, there is a there's a particular tradition that we Lords of the Pit have, and this is the blackest of magic. This is the true dark arts, one of the vilest things you can do with your old school cards, and that's play with Contract from Below legal. And I think we've mentioned how it works, but to reiterate, when you cast Contract, or I suppose when you resolve it.
Yeah.
I don't think
it's resolving.
I think it's when you resolve it because you're one counter spells and you don't have to buy them a drink.
Nobody's countering fucking Contract.
Yeah,
they're either forking it or letting it resolve.
They get to drink. It's an opportunity to drink.
Yes. You buy a beverage for yourself and your opponent and draw 7 cards. I believe Contract says draw 8, adding the last drawn to the ante. That last card drawn to ante is... are your drinks.
Yeah.
That is your offering to the dark gods.
And I don't know about you guys, but I did quite a few Jägermeister shots over the course of that evening.
Yeah, it was pretty hard.
Yeah, it was like... yeah.
Cabanas, maybe.
Cabanas.
That's another...
the whole thing started... So with the Contracts event at Demon Tap, the whole thing originally... I was thinking about hosting it here at my house, and I thought, well, you know, I want to have an event where all of like these inbound out of town dudes are showing up to you know, have a mingle with the Lords right the night before the ball, and people can just hang out and chill. But then it turned out like the crew kept getting gnarlier and gnarlier and growing. It's like, man, I can't have 25 guys in my house or my wife will fucking divorce me. So I sent an SOS to Shane, to Lord Simmons, like 2 weeks before the ball. And I'm like, dude, I think I fucked up. Like, we're putting out the APB.
I promised everyone to stay so I don't think I can deliver.
We're putting out the APB
really,
at this
really
event at my house. And now there's like tons of people that want to go. So it's like... well, he's like, well, we could do like Hopewell or we could do D-Men. I'm like, fuck it, let's do D-Men. So he's got the relationship with them. So he set that up. And then, you know, we just did the back room there again. And it was a good spot. I mean, like...
it's a great spot. And
it's private.
They're really cool.
They have the $5 Hams and Cabane special. So it's sick to play with Contracts. So when we're discussing the meetup, Shane's like, you want to play with Contracts? And I said...
you're like, geez.
I said, no, I said... actually, no, I said, well, man, we got the ball next day. Are you sure you want to... like get that load? And he said, we're supposed to be ballers. And I said,
Jesus, peer pressure.
Yeah, I just said, fuck it.
we
put out the APB, contracts would be legal. And
then we haven't run it back since Eternal Weekend last year.
Yeah.
And that was a shit show.
Speaking of Eternal Weekend last year, I was reminiscing about this before, but, you know, the most fun part of that weekend for me was pretty much that first night.
Yeah.
When we all met at a bar and people started trickling in, friends from out of town, even like people who I saw all the time in Chicago.
Yeah.
It's like that thrill of being in a new place and then being reunited with people. And I think that's what this Friday event was. The ball is so crowded. And
there's so many people.
And there's so many people. And then, you know, once the tournament begins, you're doing your thing, right?
Yeah, I mean, you're trying to actually play... like, most people are actually trying to play their best, but...
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that clearly did not happen. But the contracts event, it's crazy, it's rowdy, it's a bunch of people all coming together. And you played a way cooler deck in the contracts event than you did in the playoffs.
I did, actually. So the whole premise of the Mike Contracts build, it was I borrowed the core of the deck from Mike Lupo. Since he wasn't able to make it into the ball, I wanted to play something in his honor the night before, so it was completely degenerate. It was coin flip red, only it ran four forks and splashed black for Demonic Tutor and Contract from Below.
What else do you need? You're just tutoring the contract.
Yeah, that's it. Tutor for contract or for Mana Clash.
Okay.
So I had some sick plays. I was able to fork Mana Clash. I was able to do a turn one Mountain Ruby double Mana Clash, hit my opponent for 11 damage, then fork his DT on turn two, snatching Wheel because I only had red in play.
Okay.
Then on turn three, Wheel and get Lotus, Bolt Chain, and then just nuke him on turn three.
Sure, that's fair.
That is sick.
That's fair magic.
Because they just tutored and passed?
They went two to go.
I love it when you can do that. Yeah. I always find, whenever
wheel,
I cast a
The Wheel nullifies what he drew.
Oh, exactly.
And then I just rip the win.
Whenever I cast Tutor, I pretty much always have to tutor for a card that I can cast that very same turn. I can't tutor and pass.
But that deck is pretty cool. It runs the Yen Winifred, Mijay Jin, that Bottle of Suleiman, four forks, four Mana Clash, a shitload of burn. But
Yen Winifred is a real sleeper.
Yeah.
Well, in mono red.
You gotta be all in on red.
She's triple red. She's only playable in fringe decks. So
but still a neat card.
Still.
But still cool.
It's powerful. I mean, you definitely get a lot of bang for your buck.
I played against old school Dan Ursh in that contracts thing, and he didn't even have a contract. I'm like, you want to borrow one? Because I had a couple extras. He's like, all right, well, it makes my deck even better because he's playing Reanimator. I'll cast black, ditch four dudes, draw seven cards, cast All Hallows Even, just ball you.
And then go to the
bar. So we did five contracts in two games.
Holy
I cast two, he cast two and recalled and cast another one. And just beat the fuck out of me. But we had five Hams and Cabanes in two games.
That's sort of how things steamroll when, one match can go through five cocktails.
Yeah, you start out pretty calm, and then it just spirals out of control.
It does. Well, because the contract finds you. I don't know about you guys. I played, all the restricted cards. So I played, the contracts would get you into Time Twister Regrowth. And it's there are definitely times throughout the night where you're like, fuck, am I really going to cast...
Did you ever double contract?
In a game?
Yeah.
Oh, sure, dude. I was playing Stasis, so I was playing... I was playing all the fucking restricted cards.
Did you play contract?
I did. I played contract in my black-white prison brew. And, just sort of... I got to cast contract...
Where'd you net that one from?
It was not a net,
though. That was from the brain?
Straight from the brain?
That's from the upper brain or the lower brain?
I think that's why it was so bad, but, no, it was...
What was it, this deck? What was it, your black-white prison deck?
It was Winter Orbs and Nether Voids and...
Ooh.
Ices and Relic Barriers.
Friends.
And, no, it was not about making friends. It was about entertaining myself and...
I don't know.
Playing with yourself again.
Casting... casting awesome things through Nether Void, contract.
Do you use Mana Vault in there?
Mana Vault. No, I did not play Mana Vault this time.
Plus Nether Void. Interesting.
Yeah, I have run that before, but and Armageddon was the finisher, backbreaking.
So it's like a casual have a good time meetup, and you're gonna play this brutal Armageddon Nether.
Well, it was also just an extension of testing before I took it to the ball.
Oh, that's what you played on Saturday.
In two iterations of the Player's Ball, I've played a total of two colors, just white and black, and that was only this year because I played colorless Tron in year one. So I played zero blue cards. Not even played any red or green cards yet. So we're working up to it, maybe, but.
Yeah. That's impressive.
And both were stews, terrible, terrible stews. But had a fun time in the lower tables, and that's where all the magic happens, really. Anyway,
I agree.
I got to run into Cam from Oregon, you had to like play some matches with him. They were pretty crazy. And you know, I'd play another Void and he'd play Concordant Crossroads and I'd play another and then he would play another and then I finished it with the third Nether Void.
So it's all these Enchant worlds blowing
each
other.
Exactly.
That's
so
Concordant Crossroads is an awesome card to have against
World. Oh, absolutely. Like it's either, you know, beating Abyss or Nether Void, you know, that's what you want to have.
Is it main deckable, do you think?
In your mono green.
In like a mono green deck?
Yeah.
Well, his.
But you're not using
the
Ernie.
Super spicy.
Yeah.
Right? It's better with Ernie, right? You just bum rush a 4-5 dude right out.
Well, this. Well, Cam was playing main deck Force of Nature.
Oh,
so,
well, yeah. Then that's good.
With COP green. So it was a sick deck.
Oh, my God.
And,
that's hilarious.
You know, I don't think he ever got up to what, like, 11 mana he would need to cast Force of Nature with me.
Yeah. This was on Friday night.
No, we played in the at the ball. And then I also ran into Dom and had a really sick like 15-for-1 balance against him when he's like, I'm gonna play out all my creatures, I'm gonna play out all my lands, I got a full hand here, and I'm like, balance. Just pick him up, Dom. And he was feeling it the entire ball anyway, so he was having a great time as usual. So
he was warming up that bottom table.
That's
table,
right.
What was that, 32?
He kept it warm, all right. With a steaming pile of junk deck or whatever the hell he was doing.
I also, for some reason, played an extremely hateful deck at the night that we're supposed to welcome people. I was making them set their stasis.
Like, there you go. So, you know.
But I think a lot of people don't get to play against it. I mean, like, thankfully for them. So it's nice to show somebody how miserable you can be while playing the best format.
Everything turned out pretty good on Friday because we had, probably about 26, 28 people. People came and went throughout the night.
A big turnout.
I was a little bit anxious because it was like spreading by word of mouth because, you know, I don't do Facebook or any of that bullshit. So it wasn't like posted on on the web. It was just kind of spread via email.
It was definitely spreading around like a venereal disease.
And that's good. That's the whole idea. That's the whole idea. And I was worried it would be like overcrowded. But I mean, we ended up doing pretty well on space. And D-Men has plenty of space to expand to in the front room if we had to.
Oh, yeah. It was very comfortable. And, you know, that back room is really choice. There's great tables, chairs, booths. We got old school video games. NES.
Yeah, oh, that's
N64.
Right. They've got NES.
It's
a nice little sideshow to it.
Weird, nerdy Dungeons & Dragons-themed bar.
To kind of tie that in with, so to tie the DM event and the ball in, like, where, Bob, do you envision us taking this in the future? Or are you just kind of, like, letting it sit?
Feel like the max?
I don't know. It's a good question. Clearly, there's limitations to how far we can push this venue to... Mm-hmm. You know, have us, right? So, you know, having 9 tables of 10, 88 players is what we were going for this year. 84 showed up. And going any bigger is going to be, you know, a big thing to do. So, you know, are we going to go for it? I think so. You know, another concept.
Space.
Well, I think, you know, we haven't really re-engaged with Revolution about next year yet. You know, just sort of sleeping off the... hangover of such a big event in more ways than one. But yeah, so I think the next iteration can either grow it or, you know, maybe we can't get any bigger and we sort of go into an invite format. I don't know. So that is a possibility.
I don't think we have to worry about that because we still have a little bit of room to spread out.
Right. So, you know, the one thing is clear is that interest is and demand is very high for this experience. So, you know.
Yeah, it was surprising, I would say, to when people were that very day saying, whoa, hey, you got to sign up for this thing right now.
How many brand new people were there?
A lot more than I thought. There were quite a few people that wanted to get in on it and just did not sign up that day. Like, tickets sold out that day.
There were people who had not even played old school and signed up and bought the cards.
Yes. So that is really something to have heard about the event and the, you know, allure of it all. And then buy into old school to play in the event. That's just insane.
Isn't that crazy? Yeah.
But you know, awesome at the same time. And, you know, totally. It clearly speaks to the quality of the whole thing. So that's really rad. But yeah, so I don't know where it's going to go. I think, you know, someone suggested that the price could be whatever we wanted it to be, as you know, towards the charity, as in terms of entry, just based on demand being so high.
No, that's not good.
It's like, well, Brian Snowdy for that full signature, right? Exactly. He's going to charge you $200 for it because some people will pay.
You know, hey, but if it's $40 and it goes all to charity, you know,
right? Like, it's like,
and then people would do it. You know, I think so. That's sort of what the whole thing is. And we do a lot of charity. All of our events are, you know, in support of a charity. So we did After School Matters this year, which is a really great charity that provides after school programming for Chicago youth and keeping them, you know, busy in those, you know, important hours between, you know, after the class and before, you know, the crazy nights. So.
Oh, I hear you. That's how I pissed away my time in high school. I did all the extracurriculars.
Yep. So, you know, that was great.
Okay.
Any closing thoughts on the ball?
We're... who came out. I think it's successful because the people that went, you know, are so cool, and you know, it's a community event. So
it just speaks to
the quality of the community. It was successful.
And it's becoming like a weekend long thing too. Like the ball is like the crescendo, but.
I understand some people were out until 5 a.m. Monday morning.
Some people. Those that shall remain nameless. Only the sickest ballers can remain out.
One of the two present hosts might have been out at that hour. Yeah.
And I guess another point is, if you want to grow a community in your area, hold a tournament, and then next year hold the same tournament at the same time next year.
Consistency is important,
stick to it.
And I think, you know, another way is, you know, allowing proxies. You know, even though you can play with all these fourth edition cards, you know, can't get some of those Arabian Nights cards or, you know, some of the Moxen, for example, you know, so proxy, allow proxies, and then, you know, maybe start allowing fewer proxies.
Right, that's how you get people involved, get them started, but you have to kind of rein that in eventually.
Oh yeah.
I think it requires a certain amount of commitment, old school. I mean, at a certain point, you have to start buying the cards. You know, you can't be a spectator forever. But, you know, we use these Eternal Central rules, and they're very important. But when you hold your own tournament, you make the rules, and you can try out whatever you want. So, Bob, I wanted to talk to you about a particular deck.
Yes.
That you've been playing and has been doing pretty well. And it's something that I've played against a little bit. But I'm kind of curious on which cards in this deck are actually good.
What's the name of the deck, dude? Just spit it out.
Grixis. Grixis Trolls.
Oh, there we go. We got him over the finish line.
Lift the veil on that one.
I was going to save that for the next podcast.
Okay. Yeah. No, I'm a big fan of the deck. I think it's got, you know, a couple different ways to build it. There's, you know, different flavor to a different sort of, same sort of shell. But I've been sort of drawn towards the more control-y way to build it, where the only creatures are, you know, said trolls and Mishra's Factories.
Oh, okay.
And it runs, you know, 8 counter spells and just a lot of crazy stuff.
It sounds miserable.
Well, you're just, it's sort of, you know, you're all in on a couple things. You need to, you know, protect the troll, and you need to protect the discs.
Yeah.
And those two things together, you know, make it all work. And, you know, when you're playing against decks that are so hung up on their permanence, you know, it's just backbreaking to just be like, all right, let's restart everything but your lands right now.
So you play the full playset of
4 discs. Discs?
Yep, 4 discs.
I think that's why the deck
kind of
randomly wins tournaments, because there's times when you play a Nev's disc.
They blow up the first one, the second one sticks.
And the second one sticks, and then they're like, fuck. There's no way I can beat
because that. Disc was doing really good at the ball. Matt Hahn was at the top tables all day, I think, until the very end, and he was doing Grixis.
Yeah, and he was on Grixis? Okay.
And Danny Dunway was doing, I think, black, red, or mono red disco with Rook Eggs and maybe Diamond Valley. But he was whipping ass for that thing too. So it's like the first disc, you just disenchant, shatter, whatever. But the second one, you're like, well, fuck, now I can't play anything. You're going to tilt people because people forget how to play into it or whatever, you know. And then,
well, that's the thing. When the disc is in play, it's like almost like a standstill.
Yeah, it's like a lock in a way, you know, that you can't play into it and you're just holding these cards and you're eventually...
Well, what's the way to attack it? Do you just drop that big dude and make them use it and then hopefully you have a second big dude, or do you drop something small and try to bait them?
So that's the question. I don't think there's any...
Well, what would you do if you weren't playing Grixis Disco?
Well, the other way, from like the...
From the player's perspective, are you waiting... For the second guy, or are you going to try to...
Oh, no. Well, it's all situational. So, you know, I also hold up counterspells. So, you know, you just got to sort of weigh it out. But you can definitely get caught up in doing it too early or too late. So, you know, it's just really nice to have there as sort of a, you know, restart button.
Pretty much, yeah. If the Grixis player is ahead on board, they're not going to break the disc.
Are you running Hercule's Recall in there?
I don't think so at the moment.
Because if you're running like artifact dudes or just rocks or whatever, you can disc Hercule's, bounce the disc and everything else back into your hand, then disc blows up all their shit, then run your shit back out.
No, that's great. And I do play 2 Guardian Beasts currently.
Oh,
so,
that's cool.
Right, yep, absolutely. So, you know, disc, activate disc, and then it still sticks around for another turn. Another go-round if you got the... Beast.
Yeah, I can definitely see why this deck runs the tables. I think Nev's disc, if you're unprepared for it, is a colossal fucking blowout. And there's lots of decks that rely on a net density of permanence to lock your opponent out of the game, like any sort of prison deck. I don't think that, like, the Savannah Lion Serendib deck with a bunch of interaction is super afraid of it, like a blue-red burn deck or whatever.
Just run out more dudes.
But...
Well, that's the thing. It's like... You're punishing permanent base strategies.
Yeah.
For example, like the...
That's all decks, dude. All decks need a bunch of permanents.
That's not true.
Well, yeah, maybe not combo, but if it's like a control dude or a creature-based dude, you're basically punishing everything.
You're punishing a lot. Obviously, you know, burn is a good example of a...
All right, so archetype burn gets
that just
under
runs
it.
up mm-hmm. and over it, but, you know, you're just trying to race it.
Yeah. That's interesting. And Sedge Troll, I guess, is a 3/3.
Most of the time, yeah.
Kind of stalls the board, right? I mean, you have all this black mana. They can't really get through it. They probably have to... They might even have to spend multiple resources to get rid of it. So you have, like, a bunch of counter magic, removal for their early cards, right? Are you playing all 8 lightning bolts or just 4?
Just 4 bolts, and I'm playing 2 blasts, psionic blasts. So... The blasts are really great against, you know, something like a Sarah Angel, which is a much bigger threat, having evasion, having a big butt, you know, so that's been successful for us.
Has the Psionic Blast won you more games as a burn spell, or has it removed more creatures?
It's sort of great that it goes both ways. I think I won a, you know, playing with Slack today, it got 4 to the dome at the to finish him off.
Boom. Get him.
Exactly. So, you know.
Is the double blue hard for the counter spells? Because you have to have all that black for the Sedgies.
No, it's not, because, you know, you play 4 of each of the lands within the Grixis colors and 2 city brass too. So, not really a problem. And
why not just use the hymns then instead of the extra four power sinks or whatever spell blast?
Oh, that's actually a good idea.
That's why I thought of it.
An original thought. I'm sorry. It's just that whenever an original thought comes out of your mouth, I get kind of stunned. I'm like, wait.
Exactly.
But like, Manilakis didn't talk about that on the podcast here.
Yeah.
No, I've not tried that out. It might be cool. You know, it's just tough. Like, if you top deck the Sarah Angel, then him to Torak is no good. So if your opponent,
because you're playing,
you have 4 discs, you should be able to just disc away the Sarah.
Yeah. You might want to try hymns in that deck. That's actually a cool idea. Cool. Yeah, that's a deck I haven't played a bunch, I guess. We want to correct something.
This is the segment we're going to call Carter Corrects His Fuck Up.
This is the once a podcast example where I talk about something that I said was wrong. And it turns out when you copy a Mishra's Factory, With copy artifact.
No, with anything, with clone or copy artifact.
Or with clone, even. It does not enter as... It enters as a copy of the land Mishra's factory, but it is not currently a creature. So it is not summoning sick. You can tap it for mana. It is summoning sick. The land The creature it would become would be summoning sick, but if you were to cast clone, copying a animated factory, then the clone would be able to be tapped for mana immediately.
Or to buff another dude.
Or another
assembly worker.
Or to buff an assembly worker.
And that cost you a game at the ball? How so?
It might have. Yeah, there was a turn when I needed a bunch of mana against Lorien. And
you got balled?
I got balled.
Well, there you have it, folks.
And with that, thanks for joining us on episode, 2.5, 3.69 of the PitCast. Signing off, Bob. Thanks a lot for being here.
It was a lot of fun.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun. We'll probably get you back again. Something that we forgot to mention last time, there is Twitter. And you can follow us on Twitter at PitCastPod. And we are on iTunes, so we're pretty much famous now.
No, we filled up the SoundCloud or they booted us out one or the other.
we're getting kicked off nearly every platform.
Collections department.
So we're pretty much just on iTunes. A subscribe and a rating helps us get seen by more people, like the burgeoning old school community that turned the Players Ball from a 52-person tournament into an 84-person one.
Next year, 369 people.
300 and no less than 69 people. So yeah, if you want to grow old school in your community, get the word out, get people talking about the shit, host your own tournaments, have your own rules, donate the money to charity, and we'll see you next time.
Peace.
Thanks.